Joe, good morning.
Good morning.
One of the things that the report looked into is levels of happiness for young Indigenous men and women. Can you talk a bit about the findings, and were you surprised by them?
We were very surprised and obviously deeply saddened and concerned about them as well. So we had a look at that finding. It's a question we've asked every year. And we found that 1 in 10 young males aged between 15 and 19 reported a 0 on a scale of 0 to 10 in levels of unhappiness or happiness. So we know they're very, very unhappy. And I think the statistic was around 1 out of 100 non-Indigenous young people reported that. So we can see those 10 times more likely to report they're unhappy than those non-Indigenous people. And while many reported 0, some are also very low down in the rankings as well. So not only is the overall a 0, but there's also some very startling results when you go to the report and find out.
The whole spread of results. Mm. Now, Professor Tom Karma, who wrote a foreword to your report, has said that it highlights the feeling of hopelessness for these young Australians, the feeling that no matter what they do, things won't get better. When we talk about closing the gap in regards to schooling and employment, do you think we need to tackle these mental health issues first as a foundation?
I think it's a really complex issue. I think... And what the report highlights is that it's really hard to tackle one issue without tackling other issues. So we're really keen to sort of promote and know the connections between just that, mental health, education and employment, for example. So we know that if you want to get one right, you need to actually work on all three components of that. And Professor Karma talked about the social determinants of health and how important they are. And they go across a range of outcomes. So let's look at all things. We know what we found particularly was that a lot of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people report overcrowding in their houses and not being in stable housing. And imagine how hard it would be to go to school and have a job when you're living in those circumstances. So we know that there's lots of things we need to do. You know, closing the gap is around, you know, some complex issues that need, you know, far-reaching policies to address them.
Right. In approaching these findings, are we struggling to view these issues as a pattern rather than isolated individual experiences?
I mean, I think in Australia in general, it's becoming more common that it is a pattern. There's a lot of literature now around how complex the issues are and how they need to be dealt with. But I think some of the problems are around, you know, the way in which we fund programs and, you know, education is funded through education and health is funded through health, and how we have that joined up thinking around complex issues. And I think this report says, you know, let's put young people at the centre as opposed to the funding at the centre. Let's find out what they need and how we deal with that as opposed to, you know, an alternative method. So I think it is becoming much more to the forefront that it's the complexity and interrelatedness of issues, but we still probably have fairly siloed funding mechanisms that don't allow those issues to be addressed as well. So that's what we're calling for.
Mm. Well, it does seem very important to put our people at the front of the issue rather than the money. It's good to be funneling money into the wrong areas. Now, in looking at patterns of this trauma, a lot of it is being ascribed to intergenerational trauma. Are you able to unpack a little bit how the sort of intergenerational trauma operates?
Well, I mean, as the report says, that these are Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander young people come from a background where there has been, you know, traumas in the past which their families are having to deal with. So we see things such as stolen generation and racism affecting them, you know, at an institutional level and also at an individual level. Yeah, we want to stress that, you know, many of these young people have really good strength and really good community activities and a sense of community, but a lot of that has been destroyed by, you know, dispossession of land, for example. And so these young people are carrying those burdens of the past very much with them. So, you know, we need to sort of not only address these young people, and I think as Tom Karma said, all young people need to have support, but these young people need to have particularly focused supports for them that help them address the problems that are associated with the past disposition of land and, you know, issues such as the stolen generation.
Mm. Well, in addressing these issues, I understand that intergenerational trauma has only been accepted as valid quite recently. Are you able to explain a little bit about maybe why intergenerational trauma has been sort of passed over in the past?
I think it's very complicated. I think it's been very hard for us to understand that, you know, the outcomes that we see and achieve today actually have outcomes into the future. So, I mean, I'm particularly focusing on sort of the upbringing of children and how we achieve good outcomes for children. And if you've had your child or your grandmother had their child taken away from them, then it's very hard to sort of understand how those outcomes, you know, you can see why those outcomes would affect into the future. But I think just in sort of Australia in general, we're getting more of an understanding how, you know, how harm today can actually lead to outcomes onto and into the future. It's probably quite a complex issue to understand. And so it probably hasn't been brought to the fore as much as it should do and as much as this report shows.
Mm. Right. Yeah. Well, as you sort of outlined, this is an incredibly complex issue and a really big problem. When it comes to addressing all of this, Mission Australia has said that people need to involve and empower more young Indigenous and Torres Strait Islander peoples. When the problem is this big, where exactly should we start?
I mean, I think we have to start, just like we say, with putting them at the centre of policies and programs, having them, considering them and the effects of all policies and programs on them. We also need to work a lot through sort of existing Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander organisations. We had some fantastic organisations who are out there operating, you know, nationally, who were doing some really good work. They need to be empowered and funded to carry on doing that work, and also to ensure that we know where they are and what they're doing. We spent a lot of time talking to people nationally around what they saw as best practice in some of the areas, and we know that there's really good pockets of expertise out there that we need to sort of be learning from and drawing into the debate. So we know that. We need to understand that interrelationship between different outcomes and how we can overcome underlying disadvantage through that. And so basically I think there has to be an investment in the programs. They have to be whole of person approach, and they also need to develop a really good evidence base so that they can be delivered long term.
Mm. Well, Jo, thanks very much for joining me to give some insight into this report and the findings and maybe what we can do to try and repair some of the damage.
Thank you.
Cheers. I really appreciate your time.
Bye.